to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on cagematch.net. I'm your host, Trigger, and I completely surprised Dylan today that we are going to do a recording, because that wasn't really scheduled, so we're doing an impromptu show. Originally, I was going to do a show with Flosh today, but Flosh's internet gave up on him. So instead of doing straight wrestling with Flosh, I'm going to do Eastern Lariat with Dylan. Hello, Dylan.
Striga, we are back right after the Super Bowl, after one of the best halftime shows ever with fellow Tennessean Usher. Ludacris was in there. Alicia Keys showed up. It was crazy, especially if you're a fan of roller skates on there. Chiefs won. Grandpa Ken was happy. He likes the Chiefs. He's kind of like a he's really a Bears fan deep down, but he just loves Patrick Mahomes so much that he loves the Chiefs. He's like the one person who wasn't turned off by Taylor Swift madness in the Chiefs going on this year. So Super Bowl just happened. Man, I'm so happy to do the show because a lot of stuff happened in the last episode, yes. To be honest with you. And I was keeping up a little bit on the Patreon, but now we're going to get a big chunk of stuff out of the way. So it's going to make my life a lot easier and happier to be able to do this show with you. And obviously, I always appreciate an improve of your thoughts. And there's some stuff I've talked about already on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat, that I want to know your thoughts. We have not talked about any of these things beforehand, so I am very much looking to this episode. But most importantly, thank you guys for listening, showing up. Big times coming up in February with all kinds of stuff going on, people leaving, new things happening. We got stuff to talk about. It's going to be a lot of fun, so buckle up, folks.
Buckle up. Yes, let's get right into business here. We're going to do some of the news bits of the recent week to 10 days, I want to say. First of all, of course, El Hijo de Dr. Wagner Jr. very surprisingly won the GHC Heavyweight Championship on February 4 in Sendai, defeating Kenno. Kenno once again lost the title rather quickly. During the match, Dylan, I got the feeling that it went a little bit too smooth for Kenno, so they planted some seeds for you to think about, maybe there's something brewing here, something cooking here. And by the end of it, of course, the final pinfall came surprisingly, but it's not like that I didn't expect it during the match. Before the match, during the build-up to the match, I was very sure that Kenno was going to defeat Wagner Jr. and that it would just be the February defense, so the flavor of the month, so to speak. But as the match progressed, I started to believe that Wagner might actually have a shot. And when the final pinfall came, I got to say, I really jumped up from my seat because in the end, it was a real surprising moment to begin with. That I don't know. I really didn't really look out for the audience's reaction. I was so surprised myself. I read and I saw afterwards. I went back that the reaction in the arena was rather mild, but I can see that also being in line with my reaction of people just being completely stunned with what happened in Osaka and in Sendai. So, for the moment, I think it was a surprising finish to get some attention to Pro Wrestling Noah. But the question is, in the long run, will this be the right decision? Because they once again aborted mission from Kenno. And there is only so many times that you can just go with the guy and immediately drop it. When was this? Did he ever have a proper run with the title? I don't think so, right?
No, all of his reigns were pretty short.
Yeah. And that's the key thing that I was thinking about. I mean, it was for the moment, it was great for Wagner Jr. to win the title. Let's see, Kenno's reigns.
This was his longest one in 99 days.
Yes, exactly. I'm just looking at it. Yeah. The last one lasted 71 days. And the first one was 79 days. So it's really questionable, in my opinion, that why they just never give the guy a proper run, because realistically speaking, he is the best guy they have on the roster to carry the championship.
that's something that's often said about him. And you really look at it, this has become something of a catchphrase of mine. I said it on the Patreon show, and I'll say it here. When a company tells you what they think of somebody, you should listen to them. And for the third time, they told you what they think of Kenny.
Yes.
And actually, they told you last month when he wasn't in the main event, and they don't trust him for the second year in a row to be in a main event of their biggest show.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So to them, like him being this big deal and draw and all that is something people say, but there's not actually any evidence of that, ultimately, because they didn't put him in the main event. This did a pretty low number, to be honest with you.
Very low number.
And this crowd here, it's not just the number, and it's not just the reaction to the main event. Their reaction was mild to this whole show. Like, this was a really not a good crowd in terms of attendance. And to be fair, the match to me also was very disappointing, in my opinion. I thought that both men are two of the better workers in the ring. Like, Wagner, we expect a lot of. But to me, this was, like, not nearly as good as the tag match that had come before it. And it's unfortunate that this was, like... And I said it on the show, I think even the rating it has, like cage match, which is still lower than the tag match, like 7.5 is pretty low for a world title match, I think, in general. I think if you just put the two guys with no names, no anything about them, just two wrestler A versus wrestler B, and they had this exact match with the exact crowd reaction, it would not be talked about at all as any kind of match. But because we respect these guys so much, and they have had a history of having great matches and worthy of being able to go with each other, you know, we want this to be good. We want this to work with Wagner Jr. But the thing about the title change is, him winning the title is nothing wrong with it on paper. Like, I mean, he's a good person to have. He's really one of the few that I think that are even eligible to win that they have.
Right, right.
Because they've done such a poor job with his title reign, ultimately. I mean, like Kenno. Yeah, they didn't put him in the main event, but ultimately when he won the title, their big match for him was Manabu Soya. So, you know, it's like, what can you do with that as champion? Like, and they don't have anybody that they've built up.
That's exactly the point that I was getting to. You say that there is no evidence that Kenno is any kind of draw on top. Looking at the roster, is there any evidence that anyone else would be?
No. Well, no, there's like, he was the best guy to hold it because of his YouTube stuff. But they don't think that way for some reason.
That's correct. That wasn't my point. I was just going to say, I was saying that he is, because of his, basically what you just said, because of his YouTube stuff, he is the guy that you would think would be the one on top because he's the face of the company. They clearly don't think that, but they clearly don't have anyone else on their roster.
Don't have any sense is the problem. Like, that's why we're in this situation where we're at right now, because they don't know what they're doing. And for me, Noah is getting harder to, like, analyze in any meaningful way.
It's harder to take seriously, to be quite honest.
Well, not even that. It's just, it feels like there's no rhyme or reason behind anything they do, like a lot of the times.
Try to say, this was probably a title change just to create a moment.
And it didn't work. Like, it totally failed at the end of the day. And the sad thing is, Kenno, if you look at his reign, it was short, but the match with Soya, we really liked a lot. I don't know if you saw the match with Go. I thought that was even better than the Soya match. I thought the Go match was a great...
I think I like the Soya match more.
I personally like the Go match better. I think it's interesting that match actually drew more in Korakuen than this did in this venue, which should have done a lot more overall. You know, the Go title defense was a really great match, and the fans showed up for it, and the crowd was a lot better.
But that should have also told us they scheduled this match weirdly at the beginning of January, just after he had defended the title, that the title change was coming, because there was no reason to put that title match in Korakuen on the 13th.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, Noah undercuts all these guys that should be big stars and big names and everything. And, I mean, look at Kaito on this show. Third from the bottom. Like, you know, like, going nowhere. Like, no hope for anything. You know, it's like... And then you look even further down. What are they going to do with this Wagner title reign? He's already kind of in a bad spot as champion because they don't have anybody worth anything to go for him.
And you know what's funny is that he's going to be gone for the next set of shows. He's going to be in Germany from March 8 to 10 for WXW 16's Current Gold. He's only going to make his first defense at the end of March.
I'd read somewhere that that was a part, or he said that it was a part of his contract, that he gets 4 months out of the year out of Japan.
Yeah, I mean, that's great for him.
Yeah, it's great for him, but it's bad for the title. Do you think that that was part of, like, how they, like, he was probably planning to leave, and they might have jumped in and be like, hey, if you stay, we'll make you the champ.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, like, that seems like the logical reasoning behind this, actually, like, when you think about it. I'm not saying for sure it's true, I don't have any inside info, but that seems like something that could have taken place and why this whole Keno thing got a lot of rush. Because, in my opinion, what I was going to before, him winning the title's fine. I think he's been one of their better workers. He's been one of the most popular guys. I go back to his match with Go last year in the N1 was one of, like, the best match they had won to me. The crowd loved him, gave him a huge reception. I think if they had built it better to where, and we're going to talk about it a little later with the Stardom thing, with Julia and Tom Nakano, the title change wasn't the problem itself. It's that it happened too early. And here's the same situation. This should have happened at the end of the year, not at the start of the year, where you had a long reign with Keno. Wagner wins the N1 and goes for the belt. And you would have gotten a big match out of that. I think this would have been a lot better received if they had just given this whole thing time to simmer instead of just flip-flopping right away.
And then another question that came to my mind was, why did the Jake Lee reign have to end in October?
That's a great point, too. If they had just done the Jake reign and pushed it out a little bit more and had Wagner be the conquering hero of it all.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Jake Lee could have been second from the top in Ariake as well against Manabu Soya. Why not?
Yeah, well, it didn't matter. Like, you know, it wouldn't have mattered at all if Jake was the champion in that show. So, yeah, that's a great point on your part. I don't... The thing, again, bring it back to what I said earlier. We're trying to analyze something that there's just not a lot of logical reasons behind these things that we, at least that we can see, and definitely hasn't played out. Like any,
I think I like the contract reason the most.
That's the logical reason behind this specific move. But it's still bad though, because you undercut Kendo again, and you're putting these guys in the same spots over and over, and nobody is able to grow from it. And it's tough. I mean, if you look at this roster again, who would you argue has been pushed well in the last year? Like, since that's around the time the Muto show happened, which a lot of people point to as a big moment for the company, and rightfully so. Who would you say since then has been pushed at successfully in this company?
I would say Jake Lee.
Oh, yeah, agreed.
Jack Morris.
That's who I thought of too on the Patreon, yeah.
And that's it.
I agree. Like, those are the exact two people I thought of. Like, I think they're the only two you could say have been booked successfully in this company, along with Wagner, who is the champion now, obviously.
I mean, when you look at the tag teams, Alpha Wolf and Dragon Bane have been positioned well. They are a popular act with the company.
Yeah, and it was cool of them to get the title shot, title shot for the big titles as well. And I like what they're doing. I really like what they're doing with Olka. I think that he is a guy that... Mm-hmm. If you could, but the thing is, I think they're starting to rush it already because he's already getting wins.
That's really wrong. Olka Sasaki, he lost his first matches to pinning techniques that he wasn't used to in MMA. And that should have been the story for the first couple of months of his career, that he keeps losing matches because he's not used to the environment of professional wrestling yet.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. But they're so desperate because they don't have anybody else. So I think they're trying to make this guy into a dude really fast.
Yeah, but you know what they do with these guys that they have on hand that could be dudes? They will mess them up at some point.
Absolutely.
When he's getting to face a bigger star from wherever that they get some.
You have to wonder, I mean, that's going to be an interesting story between how things play out with New Japan in the future, what kind of relationship they're going to have with them. They have Oiwa hanging around in Noah right now. You just wonder who they're going to bring in for that kind of thing in the future with things being how they are right now. That could be something that dries up. And then this is who we've got, like the crew that they have here. And I would say, too, they did get a lot out of Soya, the last year. Like, that's, we can't discount that, even though right now he's not really, you know, he had that big run up for the title match. Right now, it feels like he's kind of back where he was before.
To me, it feels like he gained something from that title challenge.
Yeah, me too.
I I get the feeling that the crowd takes him more seriously now.
I agree. I think that he's a step above, like, Kitamiya, right. At least, which they were kind of on the same level before. So, yeah, I think we have to give them props for that, too, at the end of the day. Will they name this damn faction between him and Kitamiya and Inaba? This is my biggest pet peeve. I hate unnamed factions with all my heart. And this is one of the worst ones. And I guess Shuji Kondo as well now is involved since they're in the tag league. The Wagner Jr. title reign, I like it on paper. I just wish they had let it simmer a little bit more. And you would have had a great moment, I think, if they had waited and given Kenno a run that he deserved and see what you could do with him. Because the thing is, what happened with Nakajima when he was GHC champion? Very similar timeline to where Kenno has now. Won the title after the N1, lost it in February. But we saw here.
He was humiliated too, so that was a different story.
Well, obviously, that was a whole different circumstance. But what I'm saying is how the company saw him. I'm sure that they didn't love getting humiliated. But the fact is, they booked him to lose.
Yeah.
So this tells you that they didn't think that he was a draw. But the problem is with Kenno and Nakajima before, and we're seeing what's Nakajima doing now as Triple Crown. Is he a draw now? But when they actually book him right and not do stupid stuff all the time, it seems like he's doing all right as All Japan.
He's doing all right, yeah.
And Kenno could do the same if they didn't do stupid stuff. You didn't even give him a chance. Same thing with Nakajima. You're blaming him for the bad draw with him versus Go that year, a new year. You didn't even give him a chance. Like, what do you want him to do in these 3-month title reigns?
You know, on the topic of guys that they have that could be actually champions, something struck me on that Nippon TV 70 Years of Pro Wrestling show they did in Currican Hall on the 9th. There was this great 6-man tag match from All Japan Pro Wrestling that had Atsuki Aoyagi, Raizen Hayato, and Yuma Aoyagi go over Kento Miyahara, Denta Mura, and Ryokyu Honda.
Yeah, yeah.
All guys in their prime with Kento Miyahara or hitting their prime with Yuma Aoyagi or like being real close to hitting their prime or even having some years left from their prime. Like Honda is only 24 years old. Atsuki Aoyagi, 24. Rising Hayato, 24. All 24 years old. So they have a lot of time before they hit their prime and they are already that good and they're already that well-positioned stars within their company. And the other 6-man tag match was from Pro Wrestling NOAH. And it had
all the old guys,
some of them real washed up with Mohamed Yone, for example. Maro Fuji can go at some points. Takashi Sugiura too, of course, yes. Kotoge never was a guy. Goshi Ozaki has his severe issues, of course, and he is not one of these guys that can help the company move forward in the next coming years. And the only guy that was there was Yu Owada, and he got the finish, of course, too, with Shiozaki, but that's one guy in comparison to 6 on the All Japan side.
Yeah, I gotta say, I've been really impressed with Go the last month. I think even in that match, he had a great performance.
He did.
I think he's a guy who is just, it's unfortunate how things have gone with the company around him. I think if he were in a better circumstance, he still would have a ton to contribute. And it's just, you can't put everything on his shoulders again, but he is a great worker. And Sugiura, a great worker as well.
And no dispute with that, Dylan. It's just the overall image of what NOAH had to offer on this show and what All Japan had to offer, you know?
Well, yeah, but everybody knows that already. So it's like that. We don't need a 6-man tag to tell us that. NOAH has too many old guys and not enough young guys. Like, you know, anybody can see that. All Japan, I mean, they're still not the most depth roster, you know, like in terms of just numbers of people. But when you see a match like that, yeah, they have a lot of great talent in both divisions, heavyweight and junior. And both matches were good. But obviously, you have to look at who has a brighter future. Obviously, All Japan is way ahead of NOAH, clearly. But I will say this, too. A positive thing about NOAH, I'm actually kind of excited about the tag league coming up, the Victory Challenge tag league. I think they put together a pretty good crop of teams there. I like what they're doing with Team NOAH with the Limit Break shows. It looks really interesting. I like that they're pushing Kotage more as a heavyweight again, teaming with Go. I think that they're a great team, but they were champions 6 years ago, like in the tag league.
Right.
That's the problem with Noah again. Like, we're going back. Kotagay was at his peak in 2018 and when he was a dude in Noah, and we're going back to him. Go, obviously broken down and older, even though I really like his performances lately. It's just, there's not a lot of, and that's why I said, I think Oka is somebody that you could look at least. But I do think there are some red flags that maybe they won't get him to where he should be. But I mean, I hope for the best for him. I've really liked his performances again in a lot of his early matches. I hope for the best for him. I hope this tag league goes well, because I do think there's a lot of good talent there. But overall, yeah. And I don't see a lot to be excited about in the near future. I think they've got a lot of work to do. Let's just say that.
Yeah, tag league. Like, the Kenno and Owada team is a great, great story with the veteran guy and the youngster teaming. That's cool. Kidamiya and Inaba is a team that you and I would love to see pushed more. You mentioned Shiozaki and Kotoge. Kaito Kiyomiya and Royo Oiwa, they are what they are. They are mid-card act in Noah. Zuguyura and Olka, similar story to Kenno and Owada. Soya and Kondo. Yeah, nice team. Huxley
team
and Thatcher,
Wrestle
One, of course. Yeah, and of course the Bane and Wolf. Yeah, good stuff there. I mean,
that's
like
a good league.
Yeah.
I don't want to undercut them too much. That's a good league they put together. Like, all of those teams outside of Huxley and Thatcher are good overall. Overall, and we'll see some good stuff between all of them. I think that probably Kaito and Oyo would have to be the favorites for this, just to give them something. At this point, maybe they do try to give Kaito a shot again.
I guess so.
You could go with Oka and Sugera if you want to really accelerate that. You get a look at where they see Team Noah as well with that team, because they're a team that could win, or they could have like 2 points at the end, like Kotage just be a job guy there. It'll show you if they have any real hopes for this thing, like as anything, pretty much. I think we'll get a key clue with this league. And Inaba and Kidamiya, they had a great run. It was brief, like everybody's great run to Noah. They cut them short on that as well. Hopefully they can give them something good here. And the thing with Kenno and Owada, I get it. And that's kind of like a vote of confidence, I suppose, for Kenno that, hey, we've stuck him in this random team just to get him on the shows. Like, we think he means something at least to put him in this tag league in this random role that he really doesn't even need to be in. But we want him. We want the music playing. We want the crowd interaction. He could do stuff on YouTube for it as well. That at least shows you they have some stake in him, but not enough to make him the champion, I guess. Because, yeah.
I got a tough question for you to finish out the Noah part of the show. They have Nippon Budokan coming up in July. What's the main event?
I totally forgot about that.
What's the main event going to be?
This is another one of those situations where you think they're probably going to dig in to bring in some guy like they did with Ibushi.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I don't see anybody on this roster that feels like a Budokan main eventer. Nope. Definitely no match.
No, they told us there is no one on the roster that's a Budokan main eventer. And so they got to get someone from the outside once again, I guess.
EO Wagner Jr. versus Dr. Wagner Jr.
Yeah, something like that, yes.
He comes in. I don't know, maybe they can get somebody from New Japan, because they do have that show in May with all this nine group of nine, whatever they've got going on with all the companies.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they'll talk to some people there. Maybe that'll be Nakajima. Like, they'll talk Nakajima and they're coming back for a Budokan show. Like, hey, we see you doing so good as Triple Crown champion. We need you to main event our show now.
Yes, now headline. I think he'd be stoked to do it, to just shove it in their face.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, you could never main event when you were here. But now that you're there, we need you, man. Come on.
Now that you're gone, you're a bigger star elsewhere. Yeah, come back.
I wonder why that is. Why is he a bigger star in All Japan compared to Noah? Why?
Great stuff. Yes. On the topic of All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Hey, one more thing I know before we get out of here about Kenno. Do you think if he left, do you think he would have a similar run like Nakajima? Like, if he went to somewhere else, like in All Japan or something like that?
I have no doubt.
Yeah, me too. He's such
a charismatic guy, such a great wrestler, carries himself like a star, knows how to market himself. He would do fine.
Absolutely. And like that's something you, I wonder if Nakajima leaving, that's kind of what I'm spinning around. If you're a guy like Kenno.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he is leaving. Ooh.
But if you just see Nakajima, if you're a guy like Kenno and Kaito, you have to feel like, hey, like, is this ever going to change? Well, I've had three shots at this and they've bungled it every time. Like, is the fourth time going to be better? Am I even going to get a fourth time? Or should I strike out on my own like Nakajima did and look how much success he has elsewhere? Because, you know, those guys will have options. Like, if Kenno did leave, it's not like nobody's going to want him. Like, you know, like they would at least get a shot somewhere. You know, so I think that's interesting when you look at those guys specifically. And this is one of those cases where I think with Kaito, it's a little different because he's so like that was everything for him coming into wrestling that he would come into Noah. But Kenno was a Michinoku Pro guy first. You know, he's a guy that I could see, you know, before this year's out, he might be on the way out. I could see that happening.
Yep. Why not? We've seen crazier things in wrestling.
We'll talk about some of that.
Yes. All Japan Wrestling, I was going to make the transition because of Nakajima. You mentioned Rei Saito sadly injured his shoulder on the Nippon TV show in the match with Huxley and Thatcher when he did a splash from the top rope. And the splashes he does, they always look rather dangerous because he always lands on his forearms doing these splashes. He really needs to work on those, and it got him injured. Dislocated his shoulder, I think, when the injury was. So now his brother, Jun Saito, is taking the spot on the Kuroken Hall show on the 20th against Nakajima. And they were pretty lucky, to be quite honest, because in the week before, Nakajima actually had requested a handicap match against both Saito brothers. So there is some sense of this story making, some part of the story making sense in the end that the brother is taking the spot. The card for the 20th actually looks pretty good for All Japan Pro Wrestling. They announced some singles matches before and they filled the card nicely. For example, like now we have on the other card, Naoki Doi, Hokuto Omori and Osamu Nishimura against Shutaro Ashino, Kuro Shio, Tokyo Japan and Hikaru Sato. Ryukyo Honda, Yuma Anzai and Rena Yabe against... Oh, that would be changed then because Jun Saito is in the main event. It was originally going to be Jun Saito, Kono and Toshitsu. And then the singles matches begin. It's Kento Miyahara versus Rising Hayato, Hideki Suzuki versus Zuwama, Seigo Tachibana versus Ryo Inoue, Den Tamura versus Fuminori Abe, and Katsuhiko Nakajima versus Jun Saito. Good looking card for All Japan.
Yeah, it's looking all right. I think Rei getting injured sucks. I mean, Rei Saito is a dude. You know, I got a lot of love for Rei Saito. We really respect the Saito brothers on this show. They are the Dream Warriors on the show. Jun getting a title shot, kind of like what you alluded to, out of all the possible like title match injury changes, this may be one of the least illogical ones in history. Like, you know, like this, yeah. Like this makes complete sense why Jun would get the title shot. It's unfortunate that Rei got injured, but the follow-up is very easy. Like, it's not like they had to scramble around to find something. Like, this was completely easy to do here. And the thing is with Rei, I don't think anybody thought he was going to win the title anyway. So it's not like it makes a big difference there either. We're kind of in a similar situation with Jun. So I think the show will be fine, or at least as much as it was anyway. Although I do hope Rei gets well soon. I got a lot of love for him. Hideki and Suwama, something they've been building up for months. I said it before, I'm not that interested in all this, to be honest. But we'll see what happens. And with the announcement of the tag title situation, I'm even less interested actually than I was already before, because it's going to be those two taking on New Point, and the winners, and it'll probably be them, Hideki and Suwama, in my opinion. They'll face off against Kento and Yuma for the tag titles at a later date. So we'll see. It's one of those situations, you know. It's unfortunate they had to give up the tag titles. I think that's actually a bigger loss than the title
shots. Especially because they were on such a great run, not only with the All Japan tag titles, but they had this great run with the G-Infinity title over in Great, where they have had 11 defenses on the record. And that's really unfortunate for them because they were really gaining some strong matches and some strong following with their tag team. And now it's going to be on June to kind of carry on with the run there that they have had on his own.
I hope for the best. Do you think Ray will be able to come back for the Carnival?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either, based on the injury. Yeah. But yeah, like you said, this is a big chance for June himself to have a big singles run here. So hopefully he can make the best of it, and we can see some good stuff. We'll see how it goes in the future. But yeah, pretty decent card for All Japan. It's not electrifying me when you ran that card down, but there are some matches they tried.
I just looked at what they changed for the 20th. Dylan, of course, they changed the second one to a tag match, Honda and Anzai against Kono and Toshitsu. They moved Renayabe to the opener, so making an 8-man tag. But of course, there's one person missing on the other team. So who got himself an All Japan booking in Kurikanal? Hardly Jackson.
All right, that's my guy. Like I said, great man. Big love to Heartlight. If you go back to the Dramatic Dream Dragons archive, I did an interview with him. Me and Yannick did. Sandre wasn't there for that. But it was a lot of talk about great 0-1, Gone Pro, all the stuff that he did. He's a very fun guy to talk to. I got a lot of love for Big Heartlight.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, you mentioned the tag title situation, 2 in All Japan. That's the upcoming tour that we're having. Interestingly, something that you mentioned, I think on the last show that we did, was that they backed away from the Hokuto Omori story. And now yes, Nakajima is going to have 3 singles matches in a row after his title defense against Jun Saito. On the 23rd in Okayama, actually, he is facing Hokuto Omori, and they specifically mentioned that Hokuto is his tag team partner in the match announcement. Well, not on shows in recent weeks,
yeah,
but on the match announcement, they said, yeah, it's his tag team partner. The day thereafter in Fukuoka, he's facing Ryo Inoue. That could be a really cool match. Style-wise, they really match up well. And on the 25th in Kyoto, he's facing Atsuki Aoyagi in a singles match, because Aoyagi said that he is going to participate in the Champion Carnival. What do you think about that?
It's got to be somebody in that spot. Yeah, I think it would be kind of cool. I don't think he's ready to be like a guy that makes a big jump up, like it has a great run or anything like that. I think he's missing something, even in comparison to Hayato, actually. He's a talented wrestler, though. Like, I think he'll have a lot of really good matches. You need guys like that, especially the Champion Carnival. You need some guys who can bring something different. I'm always in favor of that. If it were up to me, there would always be like a fast, high-speed junior guy in every major tournament, just to add a different style to it. And I think that he'd be a great one for that. But I do think, like, is he somebody I could see winning the Triple Crown anytime soon? I think he's way away from that, actually. But I think that he's got a lot of talent, though, and I think he'll be a great, in terms of just match quality, he'll be a great person for it.
It's funny, though, watching the NTV show and seeing him with Dentamura, I always thought that Dentamura would be the one moving up to heavyweight, but now right, he's the junior champion, and Atsuki Aoyagi is the one that's moving up. So that's a completely different take on what I thought their careers would look like.
Well, it's totally illogical just based on their weights.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, like, Dan is like a lot bigger than him, so it's obvious.
I think he needs to slim down for his junior defenses.
Yeah, but so like us thinking, and I agreed with you, I think Dan's future was as a heavyweight as well. I mean, Hokuto was a junior at first, and they moved him up.
Mm-hmm. But he also bulked up really heavily, so that makes sense for him to move up.
True as well. Is Atsuki going to suddenly, like, is he going to come out like super jacked in that show?
I don't think that would fit him very well. Actually.
No, not at all. Like, his style is so, yeah, just totally weird overall. But hey, I'm sure Yuma, like, they want to listen to his voice, too. Mm-hmm. Yuma Aoyagi, he might have put in a good word for a little bro to come up to be in the Champion Carnival as well. I wouldn't be surprised.
I guess so. So, officially, Dylan, Atsuki Aoyagi, he is built as a weight of 80 kilogram on the All Japan website.
Okay.
Dentamura is built as 83. That doesn't make any sense.
Do you think those are accurate numbers?
Well, it's that website. Would they work me?
Wrestling is not known for anybody lying, so I think that's one of the most honest, most integrity-based businesses. But yeah, I mean, I think Tamura is definitely weighs more than he does, probably by
he
more.
Has to. He has to be yeah. around 90 to 95, I guess.
How dare they? How dare they tell us these lies?
Crazy, right? Now?
Yeah, but yeah, I'm not buying that. I'm with you. I'm not buying that.
Someone who definitely is a junior heavyweight is right now in Germany by the name of Tatsuya Hanami. He worked the recent set of shows for WXW this past weekend in Hamburg and in Bielefeld. And both of his matches actually are up on YouTube. I posted them on my Twitter. First one in Hamburg was a tag team match with Yoichi on his side. And the second one in Bielefeld was a match for the Shotgun Championship against the Rotation. Both really cool matches. So check them out on YouTube. He's going to be in Germany for some time now. I'm not sure if he's actually going to be staying for 16 karat gold. Would make sense. Irie is over here right now too. So I guess they are living together in an apartment, and it would make sense for him to stay through 16 karat at least. So yeah, check these matches out.
2AW represent right now in Germany. I always liked him though. He was a really good talent. Big fan of his. So good stuff there.
On YouTube, we got some matches from Kyushu Pro Wrestling as well. They recently had a show in Kita Kyushu on Sunday, where Kodai Nosaki lost his Kyushu Pro Championship to Daisuke Sekimoto. And that show drew a crowd of over 1,200 fans. And that's really good.
That was bigger than the Noah show.
Bigger than the Noah show, bigger than some Kurikan shows for some companies. It's bigger than most DDT shows in Kurikan too.
Yep.
So yeah, it's Kyushu Pro is doing very well for themselves. Just the weekend before, they had a show in Okinawa that also did a good number with 708 fans, when Osaki had his final defense against Ultra Soki. That match is on YouTube, and I really liked that match a lot. It was a heavyweight sprint, much like the one with Daisuke Sekimoto. 17 minutes, these two just running into each other, throwing bombs, throwing suplexes. Good, good stuff there, Kodai Nosaki. Is a very good heavyweight. Daisuke Sekimoto can still put it together in these title situations. I really like the new finish that he has. It's kind of a TKO version. It's called the Big Bang Catastrophe. That's what he put away Nosaki with. So that match is up on YouTube, and they are going to put up the other matches from that show in the next couple of days as well. So check that out as well.
Yeah, doing some really cool stuff there in Kyushu Pro. They're always like, of the non-big companies, they're one of the best in general. They had a tag match with Hidemaru Sasaki and Umeda, winning the tag titles as well, the semi-main event of that show. Defending the tag title.
Yep.
They're doing a show in the Philippines in April as well. Co-promoting with Manila Wrestling Federation, doing some big things. Tajiri heavily involved with Kyushu Pro. And even for, you always say, indie kind of has a negative connotation sometimes, so you could just call them a regional
pro wrestling show. It's a regional pro wrestling promotion. They are very regional because they reach out to their community, so that's exactly the right term.
But a really cool promotion, though, in general. Like, I've always been a fan of theirs as well, so I definitely recommend Kodai Nozaki, a really good champ. And Sekimoto coming in is a very cool deal for them as well, so really like what we see from Kyushu Pro. That match was good.
We just talked about the NTV show. One match I want to talk about here is the one in the main event, actually, where Kaito Kiyomiya won a vacuum cleaner.
Okay, so what was this all about? Like the vacuum cleaner?
It was a sponsorship for the show.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was really funny, like how Nishinaga was cleaning the ring after the semi main and just showing the vacuum cleaner to the audience. And the ring announcer was reading some information on the vacuum cleaner. And afterwards, Gaito won it actually. There was some goofy stuff for NTV, some promotion for some companies. Whenever Noah needs to put someone on a show and say, hey, that's our guy, they go with Kaito Kiyomiya. And they went with him again against Yuma Anzai. And they, in my opinion, put together a good match. In the end, it was kind of a mirror match because they both went for these knee strikes, these jumping knees a lot. And it was built like they played some clips before each match. And this one, they played clips before of All Japan top guys getting to their top position. They showed clips of Misawa getting to the top. They showed clips of Kenta Kobashi, of Kawada. They showed clips of... And this was clearly a match designed to show, hey, these are top guys. What do you think about it?
Also, the terrific Terry Funk thing.
Oh, yeah. The great Terry Funk memorial clip they put together was really, really touching, too.
Yeah, that was like the highlight of the show for me.
Yeah.
I actually thought the main event was, like, really disappointing, to be honest. When you see these guys, you think this is going to be, like, a match of the year level match. I thought Kaito was, like, totally on autopilot in this match.
Yeah.
And Anzai tried, but it was just, like, such a basic, repetitive match. Like, that I didn't think that there was anything special about it to even point to.
No, that's definitely, no. There wasn't a special match, no. I just liked it for what it was.
Well, it's cool because they're awesome, like, on their own. I just, something about this didn't click for me. Maybe it's a victim of my own high expectations. It was good. It wasn't like this terrible match or anything. It was just really like they were stuck in second gear and they didn't even try to go by it. And then it lasted 20 minutes. Like, they, you know, just, I don't know. I thought it could have been a lot better in general for these guys, but it was still like, it's not like it was this terrible match or anything. It was just like a very good, like, solid 3-star type of match. When this should have been like a match of the year level match, like I said. You know, we see matches with Anzai and Kaito both against other guys that are like way up there.
I wouldn't expect any kind of special match from this kind of show. I don't think that this was really designed to deliver any kind of match of the year level match, and that's probably the mindset they went in with.
And that's totally, I mean, they're wrestling for a vacuum cleaner at the end of the day. Like, that's totally fair for them to feel that way. Maybe, like I said, just for me, when I saw this match, I was hyped. Like, these are like my guys going at it, and it was fine. It was a totally fine match overall. Like, you know, that, I mean, the whole show was like that, really. Like, you know,
it was fine.
Yeah, like you said, in reality, it was just a nice little tribute show to NTV, and I love their presentation too. I actually wish they would do more shows there compared to some other companies, but
yeah, I usually don't watch Kento Miyahara entrances because they are so repetitive on All Japan TV, but I made sure to watch this one because it was really, really well produced on this show.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the production they've got. You know, and I mean, when you think about it, you know, these companies obviously have such a great history with them that it makes sense. And the show was very successful, too. You have to give everybody credit for that as well, that this whole thing meant something. Vacuum cleaner aside, it was a good show. Like, just don't go in expecting, like, you know, if you make the mistake I did and expect, oh, yeah, these guys are amazing, they're going to have this incredible match, you probably won't get that. But it was still a worthwhile watch.
All right. So, Stardom, Dylan.
Speaking of crazy that we talked about earlier.
I know I messaged you the day the Rossi Ogawa news hit, and I told you, yeah, I can't do a show this week. If you feel fine to do one, please go and do one. You did not, and you told me, what did you tell me? My head is spinning.
Okay, that wasn't about that. So I went to my sister got me presents for my birthday, and my issues with my family are long standing. That's no secret. And for any kind of proof of that, her idea for a birthday present was tickets to NXT, which was something you give your enemies, not your friends, ideally, or family. But we went, and I mean, I had so many feelings just for all kinds of reasons we don't even get into, for the NXT show. You know, just going to any show live, doesn't matter what it was. Going to any wrestling show live was a kind of a big deal for me. And I didn't even know, I wasn't paying attention to anything about that day. Since then, I've tried to do some research and scouting and try to figure out what the hell's going on with this. But no, I did not do it before this. And I'm glad because now you can't dodge it. You can't get away from it, Trigger. You got to talk about Stardom.
Why would I get away from it? It's the biggest story, definitely. So,
yeah.
Long story short, you did not do a show about it. So what we have is Rossy Ogawa, Stardom founder, and I think by the end, still the booker of the promotion, even though it came out that a lot of his booking decisions were overruled in the last couple of months. What was specifically mentioned was that he wanted Zuzu Suzuki to become the champion, and it was overruled so that Micah became the red belt champion. Am I correct?
That's what was said, yes.
It was said, right. So, he was fired by parent company Bushiroad right after the company's 13th anniversary show this past weekend. Then we learned that the firing was announced to the talent after the show, and that Ogawa had already given notice back in November that he was leaving. And that apparently set things in motion for Bushiroad to pull the plug and to fire him right off the bat. It was said that, for example, key talent like Kairi and Julia, for that matter as well, chose to not re-sign with Stardom due to Ogawa leaving the promotion. And he plans to start a new promotion. And that rumor, apparently, that is what was said by the new Stardom... Is it the president, that Okada guy? I think
yeah.
so. Yeah, he's the president.
Yeah, Taro Okada.
Exactly. Like he's in his early 30s, president of Stardom. And it was said that these plans for the new promotion spread backstage in Stardom, and they accused Rossy Ogawa of poaching talent. Ogawa, on the other hand, says that talent came up to him and asked him about the new project he is about to start. So where the truth of that lies, who knows? Probably, like in most cases, somewhere in between both points of view that we have right now.
Yeah.
So Ogawa's departure, you can say, was preceded by frustration among him and the roster, of course, in Bushiroad's decision-making or influence in decision-making on the booking, the title booking that I just mentioned. And so we have a situation where Rossy Ogawa was fired, but Taro Okada specifically said that the contract is not up. And he said that
was where it got really confusing for
exactly.
me.
Exactly. It's the usual thing, for example, in European football, when a coach gets sacked, they say, yes, he is fired, but the contract is not up, usually. They pay him for the remainder of his contract, but they don't use him anymore as the coach, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a very similar situation, apparently, that Ogawa, he still has a running contract with Stardom or with Bushiroad, whoever he's signed to, but he can't work for them anymore because they don't let him, but he also can't work for anyone else or build anything else because he's signed to them. And especially if he's signed to a promotion, a wrestling promotion, he specifically can't build a different wrestling promotion, you know, because that wouldn't be in line with his contract. So they are threatening him with breach of contract in case that he starts a new promotion off the bat right now. And of course, it would be the perfect timing for him to start a new promotion right now, because he is in the news with his departure from Stardom every day now. Yep. And Stardom, of course, on the other hand, the decision-making there has to be that they want these stories to slowly fade away for him not to be the center of attention anymore, so that his new promotion that he's starting up doesn't have that much steam behind it. And from their standpoint, that's totally reasonable. So at this point in time, Dylan, the question is, what talent is staying with the company? We know that Mayu Iwatani has a contract that lasts longer because of her movie coming out.
Yeah, exactly.
And we know that some talent already said that they are going to stay. For example, Maika, the Red Belt champion. Mina Shirakawa and Tam Nakano have also said that they are going to stay. Others, I'm not sure right now about. If anyone else has said anything about that. Some contracts are definitely up in March, so we'll see what talent will leave. The expectation right now is that there won't be a mass exodus from Stardom, because some of the younger talent seem to be signed to the company. And it really comes down to, I think, who the talent thinks that is the best for them to work with and who they owe loyalty to. For example, when we talk about performers like Maika or Mina Shirakawa, they came into the company at a point when Bushiroad was already in play. Tam Nakano, she came in when Ogawa was still in play, but she said that she's staying. So there is not that easy cut between those that were there before and those that came in afterwards. But when I think about, for example, what a wrestler like Momo Watanabe was able to do under Rossi Ogawa and what she did under the new Bushiroad regime, I can see that she would be someone that could also be on the way out and follow Rossi Ogawa to whatever he does. So there could be others leaving the company as well. And then there, of course, is this weird tweet that Tony Khan made about business espionage. And of course, the speculation about Rossi Ogawa maybe having ties with WWE and that leading to Kairi to go back to WWE and for Julia to join.
Well, he specifically said, bye-bye, Rossi.
Yeah, yeah, he said that, yes. So, yeah, that's the gist of it, Dylan.
Yeah, that tweet was so unprofessional.
Yeah.
Like, to me, like, why would you do that when you're on top of it? Like, you might need to work or want to work with some people that like Rossi and don't appreciate that. That didn't need to be said publicly, I do have to say. That regardless of whatever reasons were behind it, it's just so much to unravel with this situation. So much you can point to and look at. Obviously, with somebody like a Tam Nakano, yeah, she came earlier on, but it doesn't take a genius to see that one of the people Bushiroad was very behind was her. It wouldn't be surprising with everything Julia said publicly, Rossi said, Tom now as well. It wouldn't be surprised at all if they were the ones that pushed for her to beat Julia back in April for the title. That Rossi wasn't behind her anyway. I mean, she had gotten a push beforehand. That just whole thing was felt weird and not good and obviously wasn't successful ultimately. And everything kind of, you could point to that. I point to something I think happened, and I haven't really seen talked about. Go back to the historic crossover show with New Japan and Stardom. And this is something I've been thinking about long before any of this happened, right when they added the IWGP women's title. Is it possible that certain people on the New Japan side and the Bushiroad side saw Stardom when they had that show? Stardom now is flying a little too close to the sun to New Japan. Because right after that, we saw them get that Tokyo Dome deal, where it was like 5 minutes, and, you know, not very well received. they spent all of this money on Mercedes that didn't really have any impact in Japan itself. You know, maybe on the international side, it definitely made some good moves. Maybe not as, you know, maybe not the best for the company in Japan itself at the time, and that was a big focus. You see the big change with Tom in the main event there with the red belt title win. And then all of these shows just back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they needed to get somebody new, when they got rid of the president in November, and now we see this. When New Japan needed a president, they turned to Hiroshi Tanahashi. Like, Bushiroad put Tanahashi in there. And for Stardom, they basically put just some dudes. Like, with all intents and purposes. Nobody with any, you know, stake in Stardom. No history there. No history even booking. And they just put guys there. I think that's really interesting. Like, the different ways that they've looked at New Japan and Stardom ever since that historic crossover show happened. Because if you remember, 2022 and 2021, that was like a golden age for Stardom. During the pandemic, they were the only company that increased their revenue and their just pure basic numbers. They increased through 2022, even with the pandemic going on. I think it's interesting how that all worked out. And I do think that there are ulterior motives in play on the Bushiroad side and, you know, with how that works.
Is it funny that right after that firing of Rossi Ogawa, they announced that for the first time in forever, there will be an IWGP Women's title match on a New Japan show. Mayu Watani is defending against Mina Shirakawa on the Sapporo show on the 23rd. And it's a 9-match show. 10 matches if you count the Frontier Zone. So I can see the women once again being big-leagued by New Japan.
And now they've got their guys there. You know, the people that they can... Maybe Rossi was trying to fight back against that. And they didn't like that. They need guys who they can control running Stardom. And that's where we're at now. Like, that's kind of what that reads like to me when you say it like that. I didn't even think about that specifically. But when you think about it, again, they're putting their guys in there. Do they have an association with Stardom or any knowledge of booking? None that we know of. And nothing against them. Maybe they'll do great. But they just, it's not the same as putting Tanahashi into a New Japan position at the end of the day. And with that knowledge that we have of them coming back, it definitely seems like they needed people they needed to control. And they made that happen. And they got rid of the guy who they couldn't control as much as they wanted. That's how that reads to me. Not to say Rossi's perfect either now. Because there's a lot there. And if you really look at this, this is not that dissimilar. I mean, there's definitely differences, though. Like, the reasons behind it are different. But this is not that dissimilar from when he's done it in the past multiple times. When his companies have fallen apart and broken apart. Everyone will point to the All Japan Women when he left there, and the Arcyon split as well when he left All Japan to build up Arcyon, and how that worked out. And you could see something similar happening here, although the peaks weren't as high and the differences aren't as strong. But still, I think that this is something he's done before, so we can't just discount
him poaching talent in Ice Ribbon.
And what the Julia thing, that's definitely one of those weird... Again, and I really am always saying this too when we talk about like legal issues in Japan. Like, it's so difficult to understand like legal stuff, like, you know, overall, if you're not a lawyer or something in there, especially in a culture we don't really fully understand the laws there.
Yeah, that's correct. But she had a running contract with Ice Ribbon and appeared on a Stardom show.
Yeah. And that was because of the hurricane, right? When that happened, you know, it seemed like, you know, all was well. And then her thing got delayed because of the typhoon or whatever.
I guess.
And so, then she just went in anyway. Again, and I don't know. Like, I don't know the laws regarding that at all. Overall. But it seemed like that it was bad, but it got made worse. Like, you know, inadvertently almost. But and some bad decisions on Julia's part as well. But we can't know for sure. The fact of the matter is, these laws and stuff are kind of hard to discern for the fact of the matter. But, you know, the fact is that he's done it multiple times now. There are definitely things you need to look at in that situation. In terms of, you know, bringing people over, You know, I will shout out Fumi Saito. Did a show with his friend Jim Valley, Pacific Rim podcast, where they talked pretty in depth about this whole deal. And when I was listening to that, he kind of made it. And Fumi, if you don't know him, he's been friends with Rossi for decades and decades and decades. Yes. So obviously he's got a very personal attachment to that. But he basically made it seem like this promotion's like near, like they've got titles, they've got the name, they've got six people that are ready. Like they've got all of this stuff ready out of the gate. So it does make you think that this was at least planned. Probably
it
what
has
was said. Yeah, what was happened in November, right? And they said that he announced it. So you'd have to think at least since then he was getting all of his ducks in a row, so to speak, there. So it's a really messy situation on both sides.
What do you think is the success rate of this new company? What do you think they can achieve?
I think that the thing with this, too, I saw somebody say something to the effect of, we're heading towards a new dark age. We're already there, bro. We are already there. That was decided last year when Bushiroad meddled and made so many bad decisions, ultimately. And like I said, the proof's in the pudding. Compare the end of the year 2023 to the end of the year 2022.
Yeah.
It's like a different world, you know, and a lot of that is because of their bad decisions, pushing the wrong people, putting the schedule so messed up that everything went wrong and people got hurt because of it. Backstage disarray, people getting fired, people wanting to leave. Just everything went bad last year. It was a terrible year for Stardom, unfortunately. And they were responsible for a lot of that. And now with this, another breakup, it's not as bad. You know, you see some people say stuff like All Japan and Noah split. It's much more similar to the Zinjo and Arcion deal than the All Japan and Noah deal. It's not like the whole roster is jumping over with them. I think that's like super low possibility. And in like Mayu's case, she can't, even though it seems like she wants to go. Like pretty much, like she's begging to go. I think he even said something like she's trapped in this contract. There.
Do you think she'll go when the contract is up?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know her story, she like her relationship with Rossi is like very personally close.
And that's exactly what I tried to find out when I was talking about all these women on the roster. Who has the closest ties to Rossi Ogawa in this company?
Well, you know, sometimes, because like you said, close in wrestling can only go so far.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And like somebody like Tom Nakano, I've said it a million times, she's a disciple of Onita.
Mm-hmm.
She's about herself.
She will go wherever the money is. That's correct.
She's on Tom Nakano's side, and which is the right way to be as a wrestler. Sure. Like, how many times? This is why I wasn't so hard on Julia when all that Ice Ribbon stuff, because all these people came out hating on her. And I love Ice Ribbon. That's a company that's very vital to my existence. I know people there. It's a great company, blah, blah, blah. But promotions have screwed over wrestlers so many times, so many times in the past. So if a wrestler is out for themselves, I can't hate on that too much. Just as with my history as a wrestler and everything, I can't hate on that, knowing how promoters in general are. Maybe not in Japan specifically, but there's no reason for me to believe otherwise. But the fact of the matter is, it's been said that Julia was said to want to go to WWE, obviously, but it seems like plans may have changed on that end, and maybe she'll be around to help out this Rossi project here.
Yeah.
I think when you go on.
The thing is, though, for how long can she
prolong? Yeah, we don't know.
For how long can she prolong her departure to WWE before they give up interest?
I mean, that's her decision to make at the end of the day. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what their thoughts are in WWE. But I mean, that company's so crazy right now. Maybe staying away for a while is a good.
Yeah, maybe it is, yes.
You know? Even from a personal level, I don't think that's the worst idea at the end of the day. You look at the upcoming cards, it's notable that God's Eye, really none of them were on these cards. And so someone like Shuri, I definitely think, would be a candidate on there. Again, this is all speculation, though. We don't know the facts. We're trying to...
No, we're just trying to figure out and analyze who could have what motivation.
Yeah, and that's just something I noticed, that God's Eye was off the cards coming up in the future. So that could be somebody you think somebody like maybe you know, Utami would be a big project of his in the earlier days. She kind of took a back seat recently. You can see somebody like a Tall Saya is going to be heavily with Bushiroad's side, like somebody that they clearly want to push there, you would think, Kamatani. So, you know, maybe like some people from the past, like Saki Kashima and Koguma, who are around 12 years ago, would be people you might want to look at. Like Azumi is another one. Starlight, yep. I think.
Hazuki.
Yeah, Hazuki is another one. I think Starlight is a really strong candidate to go, actually. Like, he said plenty of times and put her over really strong. And Starlight's a person that hasn't been, you know, her push hasn't exactly been super strong under like, Bushiroad's reign. So I could see Starlight being a candidate. So you look at Julia, maybe Shuri, maybe Starlight Kid. I mean, that's three of the biggest names of Stardom. Like, to me, absolutely, this hurts Stardom more than helps, like, anything, like losing these people. And then Mayu will come down the line in all likelihood. That's four big names, like right there, Julia, Shuri, Starlight, and Mayu. Like, you can continue Mayu and Starlight's story in this new company. So that's four huge names right
and
there.
We already saw that it got picked up by others that run Yoshi shows. Zajiro Takagi made a comment about it, saying that there is turmoil in the wrestling scene, but that it can also help and benefit the business. And Shuji Ishikawa, of course, who left All Japan Pro Wrestling and is now the new head of Evolution Yoshi. And he said that, he's looking forward to work together with either of these companies. So they're looking at building synergy with... I gotta think that they would want to build synergy with, or that they could build synergy with the Ogawa group, because if I was Bushiroad in Stardom right now, I would want to keep my wrestlers completely exclusive to my roster. At this point that you're probably losing key talent, you want to make sure that the talent that you have left can only be seen in your promotion.
And that's true. The big winner is the big dog with this, because he said not that long ago he wanted to challenge Stardom.
Right.
Now he might have a chance. Now all these people are leaving and Stardom might not last.
Yeah, he wants to have 10 trainees by the end of the year. And I said it on Twitter. Given the track record that he has with, of course, with Zubama also in training, with a track record of Zones and Chi-Chi and what was the third person's name?
Sunny.
Sunny, right. They were trained well.
She's a referee now.
Yeah, she's a ref now for Evolution. They were trained well, and if they're able to get trainees that are talented, I can totally see them having 10 trainees by the end of the year.
I just think this is a really bad sign for the future of Joshi. Like, the top promotion is like getting split off a little bit.
And that's correct, yeah.
If something happens, like, again, maybe all of these names don't go. Maybe Shuri stays and Mirai stays and, you know, all of that. Julia's gone for sure. Like, that's going to happen at the end of the day, one way or the other. And after that, we'll see what happens, but if you're looking at the names we're talking about, this leaves you with a cast of characters where Tom's still there. That's good. Nakano's there. Gesundheit as well. Nakano's there. You'll have maybe Tall Saya again, somebody you could look at there. Suzu, that's interesting because it was said that he wanted her to win the belt, and then they pushed against it. So Saya, is she on? Nobody can know for sure. At the end of the day, that would be another blow if they lose her. Maybe somebody like Natsupoi, I think, would stay probably as well. If Tom's there, you would look at. You still have like somebody like an Ano who's a freelancer. She might work for both companies. Like, Ano would go into Stardom and Rossi's thing. Nice. That's my kind of wrestler. Like, another one on team salary right there. I love it. But then after that, it's like...
What about Mira?
She's another one. I mean... That feels like you could go either way. She's another one that was off the cards with Shuri. That may be out of loyalty to Shuri, perhaps, or something like that. Again, purely speculation. I don't know. I'm just saying that God's Eye was off the cards for a little extra longer than... And they may be put back on the cards by the time everybody hears this at the end of the day. But I'm just saying
on the cards this weekend, wasn't she?
Yeah, but I'm saying in the future shows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're off the future one's coming up. I mean, they had a show where it took them forever. They didn't even announce any names for this show on Valentine's Day. Like, you know, it took them forever to announce.
I mean, maybe know why.
But yeah, now we definitely know why. At the end of the day. You know, like I said, Shuri and Ami Sarai and Mariah and all those people, they were there. But maybe that we put on the shows in the future by the time this releases. I'm just saying right now. And everyone else, they announced the cards. So I just think that it's interesting that they announced matches for everybody else, but not God's. So that's kind of something to look at. But again, it's just correlation may not equal causation at the end of the day in this. So we'll see. But either way, I just think if these are the type of people we're talking about leaving, and five of those, no matter who it is, which names, and Fumi said six on his show, for the record. I'm just going by what he said on his. If six of those kind of names comes out, you might throw in like a Saya Iida as well, kind of stalled out in Stardom. Maybe she would be there to go to Ross's deal. If six of these names leave, Stardom's, where are they going to be at, you know, with all of these people? How are they going to handle this?
It's going to be tough for them to maintain their audience.
And the rosters are, it's like you've took a great roster and a strong roster, and now one side has some pieces and the other side has some pieces, but neither as strong as they were before. And now you've just got two more Joshi companies in there rather than one leader, you know, like that. Stardom was head and shoulders the leader of the Joshi scene the last few years.
It's crazy how they fell off from that. You would think that after that year end 2022, there would be no company that could ever hold a candle to them. But then last year happened, and now we're at the point that we are.
Yeah, we were talking about them, running the dome potentially in the near future. Yeah. And I mean, it feels so far. And like I said, we knew that already, even before this firing happened, that things fell off huge. And again, that's why. And the thing is, I wouldn't say, because like I said, Rossi's not perfect in this situation at all. But if you really look at it, it's hard for me not to point the finger at Bushiroad a lot more with how they've handled the women's division in New Japan, the title and all of that stuff, how they've handled the situations with people getting injured, how they've handled the presidency, and how they've handled their own company. People are leaving left and right in one company. You're firing presidents in both companies the same year. It seems like Bushiroad is not doing a great job in general with their wrestling side of things. And that's why I point the finger at them more. If you're going to point a finger, I think they are more to blame. If they had left Rossi alone and things had gone his way, I think we would have been in a better position for sure than how they've done it.
And it's Obari. He wasn't a wrestling guy either, right?
I don't think so. Another guy. Remember when they did the women's title thing? He said that he wanted the New Japan Dojo to be ran more like Stardom. He thinks Stardom, like, why is Stardom being so successful in this pandemic and New Japan isn't? He had that interview that pissed a lot of people off in the company, and now he got fired for it. And I thought Obari had a lot of good ideas, like as presidency personally.
Me too. Yeah.
But politics.
Politics. Taro Ogawa.
I don't know anything about this guy.
Me neither. He doesn't have a Wikipedia profile, so I can't.
He just seems like a Bushiroad guy that they put in.
He seems like a suit, yes.
Exactly. Like, that's exactly it. Like, he's a guy that they can control, just like I said.
Yeah.
And maybe he'll be fine.
He says to the public what they tell him in the meetings.
They said he is the president and representative director of Gekidan Airship Company.
Oh.
But he retired from that to do the Stardom deal.
Doesn't sound like a wrestling guy, huh?
No, of course not. like, of course it isn't. So we'll see. And they said, we will strive for group synergy as the Bushiroad group aim for further development. That right there tells you like a bunch of stuff. TNA had something where they fired Scott DeMore. They said the same kind of deal where it's like, we're looking for synergy with... I forget what the name of the company is. With their lead company that owns it. This is what that is. Like that's a suit that they need to control, and they put him in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it, I guess. Right?
We won't know anything really until things start falling into place, like dominoes start to fall. When somebody announces, "All right, I'm leaving Stardom at the end of March." we could talk about it more in depth. And again, I've hesitated. I didn't do any show about this on the Patreon because I was checking around, asking people around to see what, what the scene is with the scene, try to get my ducks in a row the best I can. But it's still really hard. Again, like with this sort of thing, like we're basing off of a lot of speculation at the moment. So I hope everybody keeps that in mind. Maybe none of those names we mentioned will leave and everybody will stay. And maybe Julia will suddenly stay in Stardom for all we know. You know, it's like, who knows? Like, wrestling's so crazy that anything could happen on anything. They could fire this guy Okada and bring back Rossi by the time it's all said and done. But the funniest thing that... The funniest explanation of all of this would be if somehow Nanae Takahashi takes back her perch as the leader of Stardom.
Yes!
I'm for it. Bring Nanae back. Make her the president of Star.
How about this? Rossi Ogawa buys seed ring.
That could be. I'm sure they would. It would be the worst idea to sell seed ring right now. Maybe Fuka. They bring in actress girls like All Japan did. And all the wrestlers get really mad about that. That could be the trigger point for Stardom if they do that. So, and again, it's a lot of speculation. When people actually leave, maybe a company gets announced. Maybe Rossi brings out the logo and the belts and all that stuff that was talked about. Maybe we could see that and we could talk about it more. But right now, we just have to go with what we're going with Stardom. They did have a show not that long ago, which was pretty good. To be honest with you, it had the main event was Micah and Kamatani, Supreme fight. The semi main was Ano and Starlight Kid, and the best match was the high speed match between Hazuki and Mei Sara on there. So definitely check out the high speed match. That match freaking rocked! Like that was a great match. The other two weren't great in my opinion, but they were good enough, and we're checking out.
Yeah, I mean, it was the show that Ogawa was fired at.
They had had enough. Funny thing is that there was a match on there too where it was they had Azumi and Utami teaming, and they're normally of Queen's Quest. They try to break out the factions and the units real strict usually, but they teamed with Mayu, who's in Stars, and Nai, who's 7-Up, and they took on God's Eye team, who Mirai and Shuri,
who's and they, Julia,
and they teamed with Julia and Suzu Suzuki on that show. So like that, maybe that's something to look at too. That match right there with how people split up. And maybe that's something that was kind of like a little clue Rossi left on his way out before he got fired here. we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of talented wrestlers, a lot of great young talent in Stardom. I think that's something they've actually improved upon with Bushiroad, is they've got a lot of new rookies that they can build upon. So we'll see what happens, but that's all we can say now for it. So hopefully the best occurs and we can get back to where we were before. And all these people want us to talk about Stardom more because the company is so great and they can do great things in the future.
Okay, yeah. From Stardom, we go to New Japan Pro Wrestling, the second Bushiroad promotion right now. And their very successful show in Eden Arena Osaka, drawing a full house of 5,327 fans. I noted on Twitter, this is their most successful show, not in Osaka, but in this arena since 2019, since the second G1 show that year they ran in Eden Arena, Osaka. Full house, and it was a packed card, and you'd expect that this card was going to be sold out with the final match between Okada and Tanahashi, with Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr., and of course, the dog pound cage match, Dylan. What do you want to talk about first on this show? There's different ways we can tackle that.
I think we got to really talk about the big news, and that is the IWGP tag team titles.
Yes, let's look at that. Like, Okada and Tanahashi were having their last match, and it was just a very good way for Okada to go out. It was almost like a band playing the best of tour, right?
Yeah.
It was like Hiroshi Tanahashi and the Rainmaker Experience playing their best of. And it was just so nice to watch. And it comforted me really well to just sit there and watch these guys do their match once again. And there was this tearful goodbye by Okada after the match. We saw the pictures taken by Tokyo Sports backstage. And the next thing you know, it's Chase Owens and Kenta going for the tag titles and actually beating Guerrillas of Destiny. I was so mad. I was so the feelings I had for this show, they were really on a roller coaster. I was on a roller coaster for this show. I was so emotionally high for Okada and Tanahashi. Then we got this shit in the tag team title match with Chase Owens and Kenta with this god-awful fuck finish. They took the tag titles of Phantasma and Hikuleo. They always do that. And it's such a meme by this point that they always take away the title after the team has won them on the biggest stage. It's so incredible. But whatever. Like, we had this thing, and then next thing you know, you get Zack Sabre Jr. and Bryan Danielson. And that is this part of the show, this part of the card is the issues that New Japan has had in the last couple of years. They have had great heights with Okada, Tanahashi, Zack, and others that perform on a high level, but they always have this shit on these cards that make you think, why the hell is this happening? And here we have it once again. And you knew going into this match that the title change was happening. And of course, Gedo is doing that for the heat of for whatever he's doing that, but it's never working. Nobody fucking cares about that. But they still did it. And here we are.
Gedo, Fraud of the Year award winner, once again here with this booking.
I went a little WH on this rant right here.
Good. Shout I have to say, a lot of love to W.H. Park. Check out his recent show he did on Post Pros with Karen Peterson.
Yeah, it was a fun show because they did it the day before Ross Yagawa was fired.
Yeah, all good vibes.
Yes.
But no, big love to W.H. I can't even say I was that like emotional about this match because Phantasmo and Hikuleo suck too. So it's fine. Like, you know, like they're bad too. So it's okay. Like I wasn't into their reign at all. It's good that they got him off of him. It's unfortunate they went to somebody even worse there. But the title is like, it was at a zero before. It's at a zero now. Like, there was no positive
below zero now.
It might be. I mean, but it's a shame because Bishamon did so much good for the titles. But outside of them, how many great tag title reigns?
No, we don't have to go into that. That's definitely correct.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, the titles are just terrible. No matter what, for whatever reason, they never booked them. But this is like,
it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you never give a team a proper run, you will never have a good title run. I mean, yes, the exception for the rule was Bishamon, but there is nothing else that they ever tried that could really work.
And the people they put in weren't any good. They were all like lame foreigners and like, you know, G.O.D. and you know, Killer Elite Squad.
The Aussie Open run could have been good, but there was the injury.
Yeah, they had that injury undercut that they left on there. So, yeah, like, at least with Phantasma and Hikuleo, they were at least trying to build people, you thought. I mean, what upside is there in Owens and Kenta? Done, I think, overall.
No.
But I did want to bring that up first because this was a great show overall in general.
Yes.
Like, I thought this was a better show than Wrestle Kingdom, actually, like in terms of the top.
I thought so, too. And this show really felt like a New Japan vibe show from before the pandemic.
Exactly. Like I said on Twitter, this was the best New Japan show in years.
Yeah. And it's rated 8.72 and deservedly so. I mean, looking back at New Japan shows from before the pandemic, it wasn't all sugar. There was some dirt on the cards as well, on the undercards. Someone in the Cagemat Discord talked about that on this card, we had some bullshit as well. And I said, yes, Doc Gallows was in the G1 Climax before the pandemic too. And
true,
you know, there were guys that didn't really light the world on fire. We went to the NWA discussing Jax Dane and went to the famous Big Daddy Yum Yum GIF. So there was shit too in New Japan before the pandemic.
Yep. Yep.
And there's shit too now. But overall, I really got to agree with you. The card really felt like the vibe was back for New Japan.
I think the Wrestle Kingdom show did have that as well. Not in terms of the match quality per se, but in terms of the spectacle of it all. And we said it when we talked about it on the show. When you look at the entrances and the production values, this felt like the first Wrestle Kingdom in years.
Yeah,
that felt WrestleMania level in terms of production values and things like that. So I think they Wrestle Kingdom set the table, and this show really showed us, like, because the top two matches were like extremely memorable. Yeah. And just great
in their own right, completely different from one another.
Yeah.
And that's usually great when you have a New Japan show. You usually have these kind of matches that are completely different from one another, that are distinctive, and that have their own taste and still can function within New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Absolutely. Do you want to talk about Okada and Tanahashi now? Because I do have a greater overall point about Okada.
I basically made my point about the match. They went and played their greatest hits.
Yeah, the match itself was good. Not anything super special. Like, hardly one of their best ever or anything like that. But it was a good nostalgia trip for the fans. That's all it was. It was all it was meant to be.
Exactly.
And that's all it had to be. My issue with this. That match we just talked about, the tag title match, was above this on the card.
Yeah.
And have you seen Okada's last match that they have announced?
Yeah, they announced the multi-man match, yep.
So, I just think it's really interesting how this farewell tour for Okada's gone here. For somebody who's such a legend to the company, it's so vital to their international expansion as well. Why are they doing this like this way? What is the reason?
It is definitely interesting.
I have an
addition to your point. Yeah. I looked at the card for Sapporo. And I was thinking, yeah, man, Zack Sabre Jr. coming off of this great win against Brian Danielson, couldn't he like get a big match on the show as well? And he's wrestling Yuji Nagata in the opener. Nothing against Nagata, but he's far from being one of their big stars in 2024.
True.
Wouldn't it have been great, Dylan, if Zack Sabre had faced Okada and beaten him?
Okada doesn't want to do jobs, though.
That's the point.
Yeah. But even still, I think there's... And I actually don't... It doesn't bother me that much, actually.
No, it doesn't have to be like that.
Yeah.
But going back to what we said when we first discussed if Okada would be leaving, they left
so much on the table. Yeah, you're right.
Could have worked out differently for so many guys. I mean, the six-man tag title match where Kosei Fujita got his moment with Okada, it was all nice and good, and nobody expected Fujita to win here. But couldn't there have been someone that benefited from Okada leaving? Ospreay, he did the job.
Yeah, this kind of brings me back to what I was going to say for why things are how they are right now. The stuff about him losing should have been handled last year, in my opinion. Like that should have been happened already long before we got to this point.
Yeah.
And considering he was stuck in this, he was so busy with the very important prestigious six-man titles that they couldn't work around this. It makes me wonder if maybe there was a little heat backstage between some people and the Rainmaker himself. Maybe there was some headbutting going on about maybe he didn't want to do things. Maybe they weren't happy with it. Again, just speculation. But when you see how things have gone, they purposely put this legendary match forth from the top. This could have been a main event level match. Like if they wanted it to be.
And they purposely put the IWGP Tag Team title above it.
Exactly. Like that wasn't on accident. And to see his last match be a completely... Like, okay, you got your buddies on your team, but the opponents are just, you know, the Empire coming off of a loss. Doesn't matter, like, in the grand scheme of things. Like, nothing that happens there. It just seems
that's
like...
That's the last match. That's his last match going out of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
It just seems like there's something that we don't know about going on that's causing this. Like, I can't imagine you saying, okay, I've got Okada, I can do anything I want with this last month of his run in New Japan. This is the match that he has to have before he leaves. This 5-on-5 match, not in the main event.
And even if Shota Umino doesn't win against Okada, we said it in November when Umino faced Will Ospreay, he gained so much in defeat in that match.
Totally agree.
Why not do that match?
Anything like that would have been better than this. Like, there's a million other options that would have been better. It just makes me think that there's some... And the way he's leaving... it's been rumored and speculated and reported on, you know, by Fightful and others that he will sign with AEW as I thought he would, ultimately. With that said, the way he's leaving, again, I mentioned in the last episode, and even after this Tanahashi match, this feels like a guy who's not coming back. Like when he leaves, like this isn't like a goodbye and I'll see you later. Like even Ospreay kind of felt like, okay, yeah, I'll be
Ospreay,
back one day.
Ospreay will definitely be on one of the big shows by the end of the year or even the Tokyo Dome. With Okada, I'm not sure.
And that's really interesting when you think about it. And you have to wonder what led to it being this way overall. And I think that that's a real shame, to be honest with you, for somebody who's meant so much and they've done so much for, and he's done so much for them.
Just look at the show that we just talked about here. You mentioned they did this match Fourth from the Top. And Okada, of course, he cried on stage and he cried on his way back. But then the moment that was caught on camera, like I said, from Tokyo Sports, was backstage. And the guy that got the emotional speech on stage and backstage was Ospreay.
I think it's, like I said, I think there's something we don't know about and maybe we'll never know about going on with Okada and New Japan. Again, Bushiroad, like, was that involved in it somehow? Or maybe people he didn't like, maybe he crossed him in some way and in his mind. Maybe he wasn't happy with booking. I mean, nobody could say for sure. Again, we're speculating. No. It just seems like something went wrong for it to end this way. Like you know, at the end of the day, because this isn't right. Like, this isn't right. 5 versus 5, no. Not in the main event for Okada's last match. This should have been a huge moment for him. Like, an amazing match. You know, and you just have to think about it, man. When you see this happening, again, if you're a guy, and you see the guys they've pushed more than anybody else. Like, this is their ace for a decade now. This is the dude that they put together. And you just see this. You have to think, if you're an undercarder, like, how much am I worth if this is what Okada's got going on here? I just think it's a really bad look. Even when Kushida left, he got a better ending than Okada did.
I'm going to, counterpart to that is exactly that. They give goodbyes to people that are well done and that are heartful. It's going.
But still, not Okada?
Still out there, what they will do on the 23rd, finally, after that match, maybe he'll get a goodbye. But it's the third match on the card, right?
It's not. Kushida was the main event.
Shinsuke Nakamura was the main event as well in Kuroken Hall when he had his last match.
Exactly. Like, something went wrong. Like, Kushida is not as big of a star as Okada. No, like,
Nakamura wasn't either.
Nakamura was a little bigger, but not as much as Okada.
He was bigger than Kushida, but yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, way bigger than Kushida.
Not as big as Okada, though, no.
No. And anybody. Like anybody. Of all people, Okada should get the hero's farewell.
Takashi Iizuka. The final match, that was so funny. It was great. He handed over his glove to Taichi, and it was a great moment for him, too.
Yeah, that was a retirement, so it's a little different. But still, it just doesn't make... This is not computing with me, this third from the beginning five match. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Why is it has to be something we don't know about.
Yeah, it has to be.
But we'll see. And like I said, if he doesn't come back... To, in my opinion, and even if Okada was a dick to everybody, I don't care. He's a big star. Like, this is the kind of guy you need on these New Japan cards. You don't alienate people to where they don't want to come back if that does play out that way.
Right, but even, let's say that he would wrestle once again on a New Japan show.
Yeah.
For New Japan Pro Wrestling, you will run into the same problem that DDT runs in whenever they book Konosuke Takeshita. Because they can't book him to put over their talent because he won't lose. He can't lose because he's an AEW talent.
And that is a problem for fans, and yet they do it so many times because he's a draw and a star, and you do what he wants if you want him on the show. And that's the same thing with Okada. Like, even if he doesn't want to put anybody over, you put his ass on the show because he's the rainmaker and you've pushed him for 10 years now. You didn't push him on that show to not give him the leeway. So to me, it's like a total non-issue. Like, if he wants to job or not, he is a name value guy that they don't have a lot of right now, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, the one exception, oh, there's always exceptions to the rule, of course, and there's an exception. Yeah. Danielson, he lost to Zack Sabre Jr. And, man, Dylan.
What a match.
What a match, man. watched it just before we started recording the show. I put the match on again. I watched it yesterday with English commentary. I watched it with the Japanese today.
Yeah.
It helped me soak up the energy of the crowd more than watching it with English commentary today.
Yeah.
The Japanese version of it. So the crowd really was so receptive of everything that they did, all the reversals, all the nice little touches and holds and strikes they did. The crowd was so receptive. There was this weird part of the audience that tried to get chants going. I don't know what that was or who that was. Was it Japanese? I don't know. There is this tendency of Japanese wrestling fans now that have become fans of independent wrestling in the USA that chant on Currican Hall shows when, for example, the GCW guys are over. But I've never seen anything like that for a New Japan show. That was really weird. But for the most part, the crowd was really reacting so well for the match. And the match was 32 minutes long. And from the get-go, in the first 5 minutes, of course, you see this on paper. You see Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. And you assume, yeah, man, this could be a dream match, right? But in some cases, the guys will wrestle and you'll watch and you'll say, okay, was great. Yeah, I loved the match. It was great. I had that reaction for Okada and Danielson in the Tokyo Dome. You know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people did as well. Yeah.
Yep, yep. But we never had the reaction of, yes, that's it. That's the match. That's the dream match. But as soon as they went to the hold exchanges, when they did the surfboard, and when Danielson threw him into the ropes and Zack Sabre sold his ankle and they went for the ankle injury storyline. That's the moment, that's the minutes of the match where it all came together and where it clicked for, I think, everybody. We're in for something absolutely special. And not only did they completely nail the part of the technical wrestling exchange with holds on the ground, they went to this moment where they scissored, they literally scissored on the mat, and they just completely slapped each other in the face. This match had everything that you need for a great match that embodies the spirit of strong style. And the great part, and I said that on Twitter as well, I was watching this match, and it's not like they were overpacing. They were doing everything at a very mild pace. Danielson was doing his headlocks and just walking around the ring. Zack Sabre Jr. was holding onto his holds a little longer than usual. They had this moment where they had the where they both were trying to go for an STF of sorts, and they were both trying to hold each other's chin, and they were just doing that for some seconds that you could just watch, observe, and see what they were doing. And that was just so completely awesome. I loved everything about this. I said it right after it. It may have been one of the best matches I've ever seen. I was the second one on Cage Match to give this a 10. Right now, as we're recording, it stands at 9.66 based on how many votes? Based on 333 votes. This one is absolutely outstanding. It was stunning. And to put it over the top, it had the exact right result in the end with Zack Sabre Jr., the guy that New Japan needs to be a main event level talent, defeat Brian Danielson here on the stage.
There's something you just got so wrong, and I just totally disagree with you on about this match, is that actually there was 336 people that voted on it, because I just voted a 10 as well. This was a masterpiece. Like, this was the match of the year easily so far to me. Yeah. Like, way better than anything on the Dome, way better than the other Bryan match versus Okada. Like, this was so damn great. Like, better than their first match, which that was a match of the year candidate match last year, the one they had in AEW.
Yep.
Was one of the best matches of the year as well. That was in my top 10 last year. And this will definitely be at my top 10. And if it ends up number one, I wouldn't have been surprised, you know, when we look at it. This
now,
match,
well, on its way to close into the top 20 matches ever on Cage Match. It's on place 22 right now, just a little behind Ilya Dragunov versus Walter. And
wonderful match.
Behind the invasion attack match between Okada and Tanahashi.
Yeah, that was a match a lot of people loved. I was always like the low guy on that, but it's still a great match, obviously.
They gave it 10 back in the day.
Yeah, like, to me, I always thought that was a little overrated, but it was still great. Like, you know, I didn't think it was their best match. A lot of people point to that, but I like others better of theirs. You know, the Wrestle Kingdom match and some of their draws in the G1 I thought were kind of underrated.
Yeah. You were the draw guy, yes.
I love the draws. That's what I'm all about, baby. I don't want clean finishes in my wrestling. I don't want that. But no, I needed it. And this is so much better than Zach won than if this had went to a draw. For sure. The perfect opponents for each other. The best we've seen Zach here in New Japan. You know, I think that this is like really where he was unlocked. He was able to unlock his potential. And Brian, of course, was the one to unlock it. Even greater than he's already done, because he's had a lot of great matches. But Brian Danielson, man, nobody could beat him. Like, maybe the greatest wrestler who ever lived. Like, in all honesty, I'm being completely serious about that. I think he has a strong case for that. And I think he just continues to add to his legacy for as long as he will go. And I'm so happy he has the wrestler soul and spirit that he will never retire. I know it. I believe it. That he will never fully leave us.
He always says, it's my last full year as a wrestler.
He always
leaves this door open for him.
And I need it. I need him to continue to leave that door open because
Flush did the show just yesterday. His internet was still functioning yesterday. And he once again went back into this trap of thinking, what could have been in the last 10 years of Brian Danielson?
And I think it's so so amazing that he's able to do so many different things. Because in AEW, like BCC is much more of a fighter, like a brawling type of, you know, group. You know, they're known for the anarchy in the arenas and all that, which he was freaking great at. Bloody matches.
He was also fucking great against Hechicero just last week.
Well, and that's where it's going. Like, so he did the brawling stuff last year with him. Ricky Starks was an amazing brawl, like bloody match, great stuff. One of the matches.
The chain match, man.
Yeah, that was an incredible match. And then you have stuff like, you great point on Hechicero as well, which was a fantastic match. Everyone loves Hechicero now, which like warmed my heart as a longtime Lucha fan, for sure.
Hechicero called out Zack Sabre now on the he did on the Fantastic Mania show today.
Give me that match.
Yes.
Why is that not happening already? Like, we need to be watching that right now. We in this show, put together Hechicero and Zach. Let's go, man. We need this in our lives, man. And I just, what a great, great performance here, though. But yeah, Zach, the win, I hope it builds to something. Obviously, early results. It's in a tough spot right now, too, though, in general, because of Fantastic-A-Mania. I don't think we'll be able to know where everybody stands right now, right away. We'll have to see when the New Japan Cup ends, where, you know, where they view people and what they set up and all of that. Yeah. So I'm not going to give up on Zach yet or think too badly of anything, even though obviously, yeah, ideally we would want him to not be in the opener. We want him to be in a major match of some sort after this, but definitely for the race of the top foreigner in New Japan, he has to be the one to point to right now.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But man, Brian, we need Brian Danielson in New Japan. We need him in the G1. We need him in the Cup. We need him wrestling everybody. He should be the one person who has contracts with every promotion in existence and just wrestle all of their big shows. And I think we'd all be better off for it, because any promotion he's in will automatically become better. And this match proved it. This was an excellent match. And something, again, if you're listening to this, you haven't seen it yet, maybe you hate New Japan. If you have any love in your heart for technical wrestling, please pause the show. We're going to talk about something completely different in a second. Pause the show right now. Get the hell out of here. Do what you need to do. Go to New Japan World, wherever you need to watch it. Watch Brian Danielson versus Zack Sabre Jr. You'll love it. I would never lie to you. You got to do it.
Yes. Now, for
something completely different.
Completely different. Yes. Still in the Dark Pound Steel Cage match. This is a fountain of fantastic meme material. This picture of Alex Covlin carrying the chairs in. I already used it to send some of my colleagues the meme of like the bully stealing the chairs from class. Then there is the picture of Driller Maloney looking like John Rambo out for lunch with his forks around his neck that he's going to eat Francesco Akira's face with. What a... I don't even know how to specify this match. It was a War Games type of match with a cool structured cage. I really loved the cage because it gave you so many more opportunities of what you can do in a steel cage match. And you don't have to do the tiring tropes of each steel cage match that we see these days that has the steel cage tied around the ring. It was a steel cage that was around ringside. So yeah, they could do cool dives from top of the cage. Was one of the greatest moments of the match when Akira Francesco came in and did the dive on the War Dogs. And he, Akira, I think, when you look at each participant in the match, of course, David Finlay got the pinfall over Will Ospreay. But the story going in was that Akira was afraid of the War Dogs because he doesn't want to do the bloody matches. He's afraid of those. But here he came in and he shoved it into their faces. I think Francesco Akira gained the most out of every participant in this match. And he gave this fiery promo right after that backstage. He is often running as a singles wrestler for whatever reason. TJP is becoming a singles, is becoming a heavyweight. I don't know why, but
Aswang,
yes, he's becoming heavyweight. But Akira, junior heavyweight ace, let's go.
TJP and Finlay had a great, a really good match they had in America for the New Japan Strong. They had a singles match, TJP and Finlay. Check that out last month's Strong Show.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, they did. Yeah. I got to say, I was sitting here and I was just, I loved this match so much. I didn't want it to end because it was so funny. It wasn't.
And it never ended.
It never ended. And it was such a, I don't know, it was, it had gore. I mean, look at Hinari, how he looked up.
He was the one that gained the most, in my opinion. I thought he was phenomenal.
I mean, he always is phenomenal. He had this great match with Gabe Kidd and Kirkenhall that I loved to death. But they never do anything with him. I mean, he gained, yes. He's great. He was great in here. You had this. You had the gore in this match. But you also had just... I don't... They were so into the joke, everybody, it seemed. There was... Sandri put it on Twitter. He said it's a comedy match. And it's a mix between a gore match and a comedy match. Some point between that.
I totally disagree with that, actually. Like, I thought this was like totally captivating and like an amazing...
I mean,
spectacle.
It was captivating. I loved it. I loved it. But it...
Yeah.
I mean, you can't take Covlin seriously, like walking down the ring with the steel chairs on his biceps.
The worst part of that was he brought in all these chairs, and the first thing he did was like throw a bunch of gut rinse suplexes. Like in the match, that's to bring you the
that's
chairs.
That's what I'm talking about. Or like just like I said, Drew Maloney with the forks. What the fuck?
But there was like so yeah. I mean, those were fun. Yeah, memes or whatever. But if you really look at the match, though, like this was like 10 men who laid everything on the line for over an hour. There
yes,
was violent
you're absolutely spots. Correct, yes.
Yeah, like there's violent spots. Like the ring got destroyed. This is something we've never, ever seen in New Japan before, like this kind of match. Better War Games than American companies have done?
It's the best War Games I've ever seen.
Oh, for sure. Like the emotion behind it was so strong at the end. An amazing spot was the part where Finlay stood up and he was like, "All right, Ospreay, you hit me." And Ospreay, he wanted to do it, but he collapsed because he was too out of it to do it. I thought that was like an amazing moment in the match. Like the first time ever Ospreay actually sold logically. Like, not that he undersold. He usually acts, like, overacts.
Exactly. Yeah, but this I couldn't really take it that seriously because it also felt like a bit of overacting from Ospreay.
Well, he always does that.
In that specific moment, Dylan, he was... Yeah. The that Superman in his match, but in that specific moment, he can't.
I guess you're right. That's a fair criticism.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, everything, it was captivating. It was completely captivating because these men went in there to beat the ever-living shit out of one another, and they did, and it was great. But there also were moments in this match that were really comedic and corny at 2 points.
I guess so. Like, Hinari came in with the bandages, but I thought that was like a heroic effort. Like,
it looked great.
Yeah, like I thought that was like great. And then he came in front of him, he punched his hand right through the chair, but bashed, I think it was Coughlin and Maven Kid, but he bashed him in the head with it. It was freaking amazing. Like, he came in like a freaking beast. And yeah, like, yeah, he had the good match with Kid and all, and he's had great matches before. But this was this was a star. Like, this wasn't a great wrestler. This was a star that showed up and like stood out from everybody. A monstrous performance that he just looked amazing in. Everybody did great. Like, all 10 of these people deserve credit for this match. I thought it was like so good. Everybody got put over. The whole group was elevated. Like, this was the hottest.
Yeah.
Like, the War Dogs have been mostly a failure as a group, ultimately, in Japan. Like, they've tried, they've gone back and forth. They had, they undercut them. This was them elevating. These feel like a main event group finally.
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. You couldn't, right now, at this very moment, you could completely realistically put Alex Covlin in the NEVER title picture. You could put Gabe Kidd in the global title picture if David Finlay wasn't the champion right now. Clark Connors and Rilla Maloney, of course, they are the tag team. They have the title right now, but they could also be like heavyweight tag team champions. No issue.
And even the losing team with Ospreay winning. All, like you said, Akira, great promo at the end. Fired up. Hinare, unbelievable performance. TJP with the new character coming in. He had a big spot with the Mist in the match as well that they're trying to get over. Ospreay had an unbelievable like going away like farewell moment here. Mm-hmm. You know, it felt emotional. The fans were with it. It was something special. The ring got messed up with the boards and everything spotting up. I do think they could have actually. I think that would have been one thing I would have changed. I wish that they could have built up to the boards actually playing into something. Like, it never really paid off that it could have. But I guess it's too. You know, we have to keep things a little less. A little more safe as you can in this extremely dangerous match. Yeah. I love the cage. I love the emotion. I love the way the match ended. I loved how everyone benefited from it. This match was freaking awesome. I love this match.
Incredible. And like I said, even the losing team, Jeff Cobb, after the match backstage, he said, yes, man, we lost this match, but look at us. We're a great team. Look at what Akira did.
And Okan had a great promo. Like they he posted on Twitter. I think I retweeted it. He had like an 8-minute long backstage promo where he talked totally sincerely about Ospreay, put him over big. You know, everybody like
they finally. It's so unfortunate that he was not in that match.
I know.
Stuck on the undercard, and that tells me that they, I don't know, that they just don't see him as a guy.
Well, I think I always say, you know, if they show you how they feel about someone, listen, and what have they shown us the last 3 years about Okan?
And on that Kirken Hall show where they had the match series, he only was included into the match series because Jeff Cobb was injured that day.
What if, to go back to the Okada farewell match, what if he was the one that pinned Okada at the end? Like, what if he got a pin over Okada? He was the one guy they put over. He's the only logical person, really, that would benefit from it on the Empire team.
Over Okada?
Yeah.
I wouldn't believe it, because they don't do anything with the guy.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to happen, but would that be, like...
No.
Would that kind of counteract your criticism?
That would be artificial, because they've not done anything with the guy in the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, any of them would be artificial, like, when you think about it. Like, none of them are push good. Like, even Shota and Tsuji.
Yep.
Yeah, so, like, maybe that's why they didn't want to do it, because they felt that way about it.
Maybe. Yeah. That could be, yeah.
But you still should try, like, with somebody. Mm-hmm. I still say, like, you, at the end of the day, you still should try. That's why we end up in this place 3 years later, because we didn't try. But I hope that they move more along in that direction, the more serious direction. And, man, this match was, like, a legacy building match to me for like War Dogs. This is something we'll always be able to point to.
I hope I really hope so. And that should be a match that whenever one of these groups disbands or whenever these groups meet again for whatever reason they would, they should show pictures of this fight. And they should go back to the point, for example, like Drilla Maloney, he dragged Callum Newman to the ring. They should go back to that at one point.
Totally. Totally agree. There's so much you could play off of this with in the near future and even the long-term future. I think that would be amazing going in there. I thought it was like a wonderful, at the very least, even if you thought it was silly at some points, you cannot argue to me that this was not successful in what it wanted to accomplish.
It definitely was.
And I just thought it was a phenomenal performance. Like this would be like my second match of the year compared to the Zach and Brian match.
Can't really argue, and the cage match uses don't either. They have it at 9.14.
Imagine, man! What a great back to back. The way in the show, I thought it was just nuts. Like that we did it. It's something so unique. Again, this is something that this type of match should not, I won't say never again be done, but it shouldn't be for like a decade. Like, you know, like this needs to last for a long, long time. They can't go back to another match like this.
And it's not like not like a match that really fits New Japan.
It doesn't. Yeah, not at all.
It fit the situation between these teams. And in American wrestling, like they do these things where they once a year they have Stadium Stampede. Once a year they have War Games. Once a year they have an Elimination Chamber. But New Japan doesn't operate like that. They do it when it's appropriate. And they didn't have a cage match in over 15 years, I think. And now they have one. And like you said, we shouldn't go back in a long time.
Yeah, and all that stuff you said about WWE and AEW is to those matches detriment. And that's why they don't mean as
absolutely
much. When they first did the Elimination Chamber, admit it. Yeah, the first Elimination Chamber was a huge deal, and now it doesn't mean anything, practically. So, you know, this should be like the first one with Murakami and Tanahashi, which was very like an MMA-inspired type of match, kind of. I mean, there was goofy stuff in that match as well, with the interference and stuff like that, with the Inoue and there, blah, blah, blah. But, like, this match, like I said, it should be another 15 years before we get another match like this to make it so special that this one was, in my opinion. So that's one thing I do hope. If we come back a year from now and there's another cage match, you know, in 2025, I'm going to be negative on it because I think you could get so much more out of this than that. And we'll see where it goes. Because like I said, all of these guys to me, obviously Ospreay's going to AEW, but everyone else that was in this match benefited from it in some way. And hopefully the real benefit should be afterwards when they actually go forward with some of these guys and their stories, like your Akiras, like your Hinares, and things like that. And let's see where they go if they give these guys a big run.
Yep. So, yeah, that's the show from Osaka.
And also, one more thing, too. They announced, again, they're doing the heavyweight versus junior title at the anniversary show. They're bringing that back this year. So, Desperado and Naito, it looks like.
Naito and Sho.
Naito and Sho as well. That Sho and Desperado are having the match for.
Yeah, let's look at the card. It's the New Beginning in Sapporo, 23rd.
Yeah.
Frontier Zone. for the Frontier Zone, they brought in 50-year-old Hokkaido native Tomoya, the former promoter of Z-Punk Pro Wrestling.
That's right. That's a he's done shots in All Japan not that recent, not that long ago.
He always is on these cards that are in Hokkaido because he's a local politician and promotes locally, of course.
Hey, he was on the Sweet Dream Show for DDT in Corkin.
Yeah.
They had to bring in the big stars for that show.
Well, yeah, exactly. So that's the Frontier Zone. Toriano and Tomoya against Tomoki Honma and Takuma Kato. Opener, like I said, Zack Sabre Jr. and Yuji Nagata in a singles match. Toki Makabe, Yosuke Taguchi and Oleg Bolton against Ren Narita, Yujiro Takahashi and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. The Okada match that you mentioned, Okada, Tomohiroshi, Hiroki Goto, Yoshihashi and Joe against Jeff Cobb, Great Okan, Hinare, Akira Francesco and Callum Newman. LIJ, Tetsu Naito, Shingo Takagi, Yota Tsuji, Hirobu Takahashi and Bushi take on Sanada, Taichi, Yuya Uemura, Doki and Taka Michinoko. They still have that feud going on. Just five guys against LIJ.
Yeah. Great.
IWGP Women's title, Yuya Watani defends against Mina Shirakawa. IWGP Junior title, El Desperado defense against Sho. If Sho loses, he has to join Strong Style.
My
question is, yes, yes. That's the condition that Desperado laid out. My question is, with Master Wato injured and Minoru Suzuki basically being not around anymore, who is there in Strong Style?
Who's in Strong Style?
And Ren Arita turned.
That's right. I'm at a loss to all this. And like you said, I mean, Desperado just won the title.
Yeah.
But Sho, would they want? I mean, they move Naruto in. Maybe they can move Sho out.
They can't realistically do Naito and Sho in for the anniversary, right?
So maybe we get the return of Strong Style Sho.
Maybe. Well, top of the card, Evil defends the NEVER title against Toto Umino. I'm thinking that Umino might win.
Yeah, I think that makes a total logical sense to have that happen. But we'll see what happens. I think it's a good plan. If that's what they're missing with a lot of these guys. They need guys to get moments, and I think he would be a great
one. That's right. Hiroshi Tanahashi defends the New Japan World Television title against Matt Riddle for whatever reason.
Yeah, he's hanging around for Japan. Tanahashi, TV champion. I mean, I don't think there's any way Riddle wins, but with them, I mean, you can never completely write off Gato doing something goofy. But I think Tanahashi will win.
You think Tanahashi did his research on Riddle?
No.
I agree.
he still doesn't know who he is.
Finally, Finlay defends the NEVER title again. I always want to say NEVER title here. I don't know why.
Everything's the NEVER title.
I mean, look at these titles.
They might as well be. Honestly, they might as well be. All of these are basically the NEVER title.
Let's just name them NEVER 1, 2, 3.
That's the reality of it, basically.
But no, it's the IWGP GHC title. Yeah. David Finlay defends against Nick Nemeth, who we haven't seen since January 4th. He's been in TNA, I'm sorry. He's been TNA, and he's been great there. It's still weird that they headlined the Sho with this match that only had one backstage skit, basically.
The good news is I think it's good follow-up for Finlay after the big win in the match. And like you said, they could have done more to promote this, I think. But I mean, the match could be all right. It could be pretty good, actually.
Yeah, it could be good. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
The day thereafter, we have, of course, the Big Hair vs. Hair match with Yota Tsuji against Yuya Omura. Who's losing this?
I think it would be crazy to cut Tsuji's hair.
It would be mental.
Yeah, it has to be Wemura that loses. But what a weird match to put
in. I feel like that Yuya only grew his hair to the point that they will have him cut it off because it doesn't seem like it comes natural for him to have long hair.
And this is a really random stipulation. Like to head on paper.
I mean, they both have long hair.
I mean, that's...
What are you asking for here?
I guess you're right, Striga. I can't argue for that, I guess. But Tsuji cutting his hair would be really bad. Let's get rid of Yomura's hair and see what kind of new style he comes up with.
Yeah, on that card, we have some singles matches more. Bushi against Takamichinoku, Hiromu Takahashi against Doki, Shingo Takagi against Taichi, and of course the title match, Naito versus Sanada. That is not a hot card.
What a weird show. This is... And coming after the electric nature of the last matches on the last show, and this is it, and Okada's third.
Yeah, it's completely wild how they structured this tour. Like, they back-ended this tour with some... Yeah.
I also think it's a bad move to put Fantastica Mania in between, like,
that's
these shows.
Weird, too.
Yeah, like... Weird. Very weird. That's about all I can say about this card. Yeah. Doesn't make it any sense to me, to be honest, but maybe they'll have, like you said, maybe the Okada deal will be a huge moment, like they'll dedicate a special thing for him. Maybe he'll come out after the main event and Naito like give him respect or something, like one last time. Like, I don't know at all. But
Sanada is going to beat him again.
Sanada wins the title.
again. No, Zanada loses against Naito, and then he gets a 5-minute exhibition match against Okada, and gets the win.
Well, at least he'll put over somebody at the end there. Like, I mean, it did so much for him the first time. Yeah, but I don't know. It seems like a very interesting card, and hopefully we'll get to Naito and Desperado, and then New Japan Cup right around the corner. So, like I said, I really liked the Osaka show. It was really good. It was fantastic at Mania. Not off to a great start so far, but then you build this weird Okada farewell card. Things are a little, you know, bungled right now, I think, in New Japan. But the last show was so great. I hope that they can get back to things, turn it around by the end of this, and maybe, like, who knows what they'll do with the cup. Maybe they'll have a great New Japan Cup lineup planned, and they could do some big things with it.
Yep, I'm looking forward to the New Japan Cup. Right now, given the situation that we have, I would really love to see the end game of this world title run that Naito is on to drop it to Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, I think that would be a really great, you know, kind of solidify the top foreigner situation there, if they want to do that. As well, we'll see what their plans are with Cup, because a lot of people were saying that maybe, you know, Tsuji or Umino might win the Cup and get a title shot. So that's still somewhat in play, especially if they do, like we kind of predicted, they could win their matches.
Both things could happen. I mean, they could win the Cup and Zack Sabre could still win the title at the end of the year or anything like that.
We'll see. Like I said, I think you've got a lot of options right now. Kind of like what we said when all this started, when Okada announced his leaving, they actually have a lot of cards that they can play. It's just a matter of wanting to do so at the end of the day.
Yep. It's unfortunate that they only think outside the box, or it seems like that, whenever their back is against the wall, right?
I know. Yeah. Yeah, you're totally right. Same thing when Nakamura and them left. That's when they started to elevate people. And maybe now, maybe this will light a fire in them to do some great elevating of a lot of the young talent there.
Yeah, we need someone else to leave.
Yeah. I don't know who that'll be, though. Unfortunately, I think they're all locked in now for the rest of the year, at least.
I guess so.
Maybe next year we'll have somebody leave and they'll push more people.
Yes. So, Dylan, that's the impromptu show that we got to do. Really happy with the outcome of it. I enjoyed being back in the mix with you, discussing all the wrestling, and I hope everybody enjoyed us rambling around pro wrestling.
Oh, me too. Like I said, great things coming forward. They did announce too, Hiromu and Yoshihashi signed new contracts as well recently. So
they did.
We know those two will be staying at home in New Japan.
The world title run is coming for Yoshihashi.
It's the run we've all been demanding, I think, at the end of the day, or at least me. I've hoped for it. At least, but no. I talked about All Japan, Noah, Stardom. Really good to talk about these major stories happening with Okada as well leaving. I think that's going to be have a lot of ramifications. The Stardom situation will have some ramifications, and hopefully they're good ones. Hopefully they can bounce back, and everything can go good for the scene. And Noah, we weren't too hot on the title change, to say the least, but hopefully they can wake up and realize what they have with Kenno and then do good things in the future. But we'll keep hoping. We'll be positive minded. Will it happen in reality? Not up to us, people.
We'll see. Well, that's been it for the Eastern Lariat this time. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.